Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Incubator Podcast. I'm your co-host, Aaron Boyd.
And this is Abir Srand. Thank you for joining. Today, we are joined as our guest by Vince Bryant, who heads up go-to-market and tech partnerships for Sequence Security, a leading API security platform. And as you guys know, API security is one of the leading threat vectors, or the number one threat vector by Gartner in 2022. So before we dive in, I'd like to turn it to you, Vince, if you'd like to give a background about yourself as well as Sequence, and we'll take it from there.
Great. Thanks for having us. We're excited to speak with you today. Vince Bryant, I do lead business development for Sequence Security. I've been at the company for just over 2.5 years. It's amazing how much growth we've seen during that time. That really, you know, kind of validates the problems that some of these organizations are facing in terms of defending their applications and APIs. Sequence Security is a late stage cybersecurity startup based in the Bay Area. The company was founded in 2014. Great leadership teams from Symantec, Palo Alto Networks, and Zscaler. On any given day, we're protecting upwards of 6 billion API transactions. So wow. We're definitely deployed at scale. And across our customer base, of all the attacks that we've mitigated, over 80% of those have targeted API endpoints. So we're definitely very familiar with the problem statement and the types of attacks that are targeting APIs. We recently raised our Series C last fall, bringing our total funding up to $100 million, and really that's being put to work in terms of expanding product capabilities and our go-to-market efforts into new regions. So we're excited to be here and talk to you more about API security.
Yeah, congrats on that capital raise as well. That's pretty amazing. What I love about Sequence is the name itself. Yeah. You know, there's a Mobius loop of continuously discovering, detecting, remediating, et cetera. If we're being honest, it's a Sisyphean effort. It never ends. You're always pushing the boulder up the hill. There's my Greek mythology for you. And so I love even that in the name. But was hoping we could get into a little bit, because I think it's also interesting. Sequence does some really cool stuff, from not only deep API discovery, detection, et cetera, and remediation, but also heavy in the bot space, we'll talk about that at length. You've got WAF capabilities, etc. And put all of that together, that becomes a really compelling value proposition, because we saw a lot of acquisitions in 2019 on just the bot side, but you're that complete package. So, and one of the things I wanted to maybe jump into is I watched one of your use cases. I think it's a public use case by Zusk, and mm-hmm. I think if you look at bot traffic in general, I know there's a huge range of what people say is actually traffic from bots. But in this particular case, it was really interesting, because I think 80 to 90% of their traffic they determined was from bots. And it had two consequences, I'll say. One is, hey, there was credential stuffing. I'm just reading my notes. What that meant is there was a lot of scam potential, but at the other side of this was they were hosted in AWS. And so there was a metered impact of having all this traffic from bots. This is where you came in, introduced incredible value out of the gate and remediated that environment. It's probably a really good place to start, because I think depending on what vertical you're in, this is a pattern that people are experiencing, period. And it would be great if you could kind of take us through how Sequence can help folks that are in kind of the throes of this behavioral pattern.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate that background. So the company did start focusing on bot mitigation, but as we continue to expand and protect more customers, we noticed that APIs were increasingly being targeted, and that organizations needed more tools to help make sure that their API posture was secure. And so we have two types of engagements with prospects. So there's organizations that know they have a problem, like Zusk, where they have an API endpoint that may be tumbling down, or they may have costs either tied to infrastructure or tied to even a payment feed. Like if a payment endpoint's open and being targeted, they have hard costs that they can understand that it's definitely not going the right way that it should be, especially when 90% of that traffic or more is malicious. Or they're getting customer complaints around account resets and getting into their account. And so for those organizations, we can move very quickly to help put our offering in place and help them understand how they're being attacked and prevent those attacks. For other organizations that may not know if they have a pain point today, there's a journey that they tend to go on. And the first stage is really understanding your public API footprint. What APIs are out there that can be attacked? The second stage is building the catalog around those APIs and doing some assessment around whether or not those APIs are following best practices, whether or not any governance programs that an organization put in place are actually being used. And so for some of our early conversations, we're typically going through what we've found in terms of an API inventory and a risk assessment of those APIs. And most organizations, especially larger organizations, are usually off by a factor of two in terms of how many APIs that they think they have.
Yeah.
Many of their specs are out of date.
So Vince, on that note that you just made, it's important to, even in the latter case where companies that don't understand how many APIs that they do have public facing or not, well, can we make it more fundamental than that? I feel that API security, even though Gartner says it's the top threat vector, is not potentially top of mind for most security organizations. Right. How would you encourage, or what would your feedback be in terms of what you're seeing in the marketplace to say, hey, you really need to pay attention to it? And it's not just about the public-facing APIs, but, because then folks will say, hey, I'm not a B2C company or enterprise. I'm just B2B. I don't have that many, so potentially I can get away with WAFs and other scenarios. Where do you or Sequence feel it's an imperative that enterprises take a look at Sequence?
Number one, fundamentally, you should understand, even whether you're B2C or B2B, you should understand what your API attack surface looks like. Because you may have done things that attackers will try to take advantage of, such as whitelisting certain IPs tied to services that you integrate with. Well, attackers will try to impersonate that. So regardless if you're B2C or B2B, you should understand your externally publicly available APIs. You should continually monitor that. And, if you have a red team, they should be using that for their ongoing testing and validation. There's so much entropy, like with digital modernization efforts, developers are moving faster and faster. And so there's no point in time where you can say that you're done. You have to continually monitor these assets. And if you don't know what to look for, it's hard to do that. It's impossible to do that.
Yeah, that's so on that note, because what we can all agree on is discovery is verification. Like you said, there's such a degree of entropy, technical debt, whatever you want to call it, because of this, the need to move faster. But to Sabir's point too, we find that there's different cohorts of capability in organizations. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily start off by standardizing. They don't necessarily start off by defining their API first before they get started. So do you find that is it a security posture that tends to get the attention of introducing something like Sequence? Or is it, hey, the developers are going, they're going fast. They go to iterate and release a new API structure and then they realize, oh my gosh, I don't even know if people are using the old our old one that we want to deprecate. We don't know how to deprecate. So is it more the operations that leads the need? Or do you find that, no, the security teams are coming forward and saying, hey, whether it's exposed to the outside world or not, we have a problem. You said like 2x people find oftentimes, and I'm sure that can go way up. But that verification, what is driving, do you think, that first kind of introduction of Sequence in most of your customers?
Yeah, I mean, I think for some organizations, it's a gut check. Like we feel, we've talked to a lot of organizations that feel they have an API governance program in place, and it isn't until they have a tool that can actually identify all their APIs where they start realizing that these are either deployed on gateways that aren't approved, or they're not the preferred egress point or management point, or they're deployed on other cloud platforms. I mean, digital transformation from the inside looks pretty messy. And so just doing that initial gut check, again, this is for organizations that don't know if they have a problem or not. They're looking to us to help them understand, you know, where are we at? You know, if I have 8,000 APIs and you're coming back and telling me that I have 14,000, something's missing there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even on that note, are you finding that that Sequence can even help people with those best practices from everything from defining the specifications for those contracts between consumers and users to how they think about moving forward with APIs, how they're treating it, how they're releasing it, how they're deprecating, et cetera. Does this really become a core focal point for folks to get this right over time? And you know, exposure is one thing, but from just a day-to-day managing the entropy, is this a really good tool? And do you have any examples of where people have maybe come in from a, let me just get my arms around this. Are the APIs even doing what we think they're doing, right? Because once we discover them and find that true schema, you may even have a reconciliation problem with your contract itself. So what are some of those journeys look like? And maybe if you have some examples, you could share those.
Yeah, for sure. So I think, you know, we have a few different products, right? So API, we have products that help with that initial discovery. We have the inventory and risk assessment. And then we have the bot defense product, which is really helping organizations understand whether or not their APIs are being attacked. And if they are being attacked, we can stop those attacks. So that's kind of how the different products bucket into the different use cases. Most organizations aren't doing any behavioral analysis on these transactions. So as they roll out the bot defense product, and especially if it's protecting APIs that they weren't even aware of, those are typically the ones that attackers are also targeting because there's no security in place. That's where they can start seeing, you know, Bola attacks and other attacks where, you know, APIs, login, previous login endpoints that should have been deprecated that weren't, are providing access tokens that are then used to identify other API endpoints or to actually successfully call on those APIs. So having that behavioral analysis across the estates, really important. I think, you know, one of the key customer engagements we were working with, they were evaluating multiple tools. They saw very quickly that their test environment was it met a lot of the criteria. So they felt like they had a lot of these controls in place. But when they looked at production traffic, some of the controls that were in place, the test environment weren't in the production environment. And so that's problematic. So being able to do runtime analysis of the production traffic, being able to do behavioral analysis is really important. I don't want to oversimplify it, but if you think about like a retail use case and an API endpoint that's just providing inventory information. So if you submit a product SKU, you know, it's going to return whether or not it's in stock. It may return some product information about it, like pricing, may include the location of where that product can be bought if they have physical stores, you know. And so a legitimate use case would be a customer using a mobile application or going to the website and looking for that product. You may want a search engine to actually pull that information. So if someone's looking for that product, they can be routed to your site. But that could also be used in ways that weren't intended. So, you know, if it's a high value, scarce item that's only available online, a shopping bot may be proxying that API to understand when it needs to unleash all this automation to try to buy up that inventory before other legitimate users can get it. A competitor may be using that API to scrape information about your pricing. We've talked to other organizations that are dealing with physical theft from their stores where, you know, bad actors were using the API to find out where the products were in stock and then going to those stores and stealing the products. And we've even had some retailers where, you know, un, un, unapproved delivery services, you know, these emerging startups that are trying to build delivery services, were buying products and delivering them on a customer's behalf, even though that wasn't it wasn't in partnership with the retailer itself. So a lot of people focus on the inventory, they focus on the hygiene and the governance, but there's a lot of API abuse that happens where the developers did everything right and that the APIs are still being used in ways they weren't intended to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vince, so in that example, so Sequence is deployed. Can you walk us through a scenario of how Sequence actually works? You mentioned discovery, the inventory of the APIs that are out there, working with data governance. How does that then roll itself into the remediation aspect? So we uncovered that there's vulnerabilities out there. How is that all played into a security ecosystem that feeds back and helps either developers or other security teams embark on improving their API posture? So that way it's not a continuous exposure event after a sequence isn't deployed.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll caveat with this that I'm just going to focus on the inline deployment of our product. We do support multiple deployment models. So please, you know, I think everyone has a little initial resistance around inline deployment. So we don't have to deploy this way. But typically what comes in, what happens is a request would go through either a SaaS tenant that we manage on the customer's behalf or through a data plane component in front of the API or API gateway. Sequence will pull out, you know, some metadata from that request and send it to our control plane, which is powered by CQAI. This is really where a lot of the magic happens, and then release that request. So we're only inducing 3 to 5 milliseconds of latency. As CQAI is looking at these requests, you know, some of these requests we're going to understand very quickly that they came from a malicious actor. Because we've been doing this for so long, we have extensive threat research in terms of IPs that are commonly used by botters, proxy networks, VPNs, but also bulletproof proxies. And these are the gold standards of proxies where they're residential proxies that have been compromised for these types of attacks. If we understand, you know, right then and there, we'll create a fingerprint for those requests, push that policy down to the data plane, and then we can either block the traffic, we can rate limit the traffic, or we can do a deceptive response. If it's not something we've seen before, we're going to continue to send data through the, as we see data come through the data plane, we'll continue to set it up to the control plane, and we're going to analyze it at a 30,000 foot view. And that's where you start seeing patterns of automation that you may not see on a single request. So a lot of WAFs, a lot of other products, security products are doing the single request analysis. They're not leveraging the power of machine learning. And so our product ships with 190 different rules that are pre-trained. It can be expanded to include custom rules where we're looking for things that may indicate IP rotation, user agent rotation, enumeration, which would identify Ebola attack, et cetera. So we have these models that are in place. And what we'll do is, again, we'll create a fingerprint to identify that transaction. And as we see more transactions come through that are tied to that attack, we'll use the same fingerprint. And so that allows us to block or mitigate or provide deceptive response to applied based on our behavioral fingerprint versus trying to block based on an IP or a user ID. The challenge with using a WAF to try to block these things is one, the attackers are going to continue to move. So your success is short-lived. But two, you can also lead to a negative customer experience. Organizations have a lot of options in terms of, you know, in addition to the mitigation, we can also inject headers so they can be analyzed by security or fraud teams at a later date. Downstream, we can send alerts to different platforms. And so there's a variety of integrations that make it easy to operationalize the product. both for developers getting tickets that may indicate that an API is out of spec, or you know, if we've seen a Ebola attack, to you know, actually doing the incident response within the platform. We're the only solution out there that does this natively, and we're in our proprietary behavioral fingerprinting is a key part of that.
Can you walk through some of that, Vince? Because I'm really curious, like, because you have invested time in some of the threat research. What if you're seeing new patterns, and mm-hmm. what kind of heuristics do you use? What kind of behavioral, methods or methods do you use to start to? Because as you said, in line, if these are attack vectors that you've seen before, there's one type of response. But how do you learn, and what kinds of technologies go into things that you may not have seen?
Yeah, we have a great data science team and a great threat research team. So. They're doing a lot of activities, some of which using telemetry that customers have shared with us for this type of analysis, some of this through their own threat research. It's a pretty tight community, and we participate in the RHI, the retail and hospitality ISAC, and the financial services ISAC. So we have some connections there too. A lot of it's information sharing. I think one of the key things our product does is it learns what legitimate interaction looks like. And so we can always use that as a baseline to flag new attacks. One of the things that we saw and released in a research report that was covering some of the attacks that we saw for the second half of the last calendar year, so July through December 2021, were attacks targeting a payment endpoint within our customer base. And, you know, the sequence, no pun intended, the sequence of API calls was very consistent. 0.2 seconds, 0.2 seconds, 0.2 seconds, repeat, 0.2 seconds, 0.2 seconds, 0.2 seconds. So even if you're a customer, you're not moving that predictable. And so that's one of the things of being able to use these models to both profile what legitimate behavior looks like, but then also identify stuff that doesn't look normal.
And just to come back, you said you used the inline option. Can you elaborate a little bit just on what the out of line scenario might be?
For sure. So I'll just do kind of the overview of our deployment model. So we're a completely containerized deployment. We deploy on Kubernetes. We can either be consumed 100% via SaaS, 100% on-prem. So if an organization's in a regulated environment and doesn't want their traffic going to a third party, they can deploy the entire solution within their estate. And it's the same product. It's not a different version of the product. So what a customer gets in SaaS is the same that a customer can get in on-prem. Mm-hmm. They can do a hybrid where the data plane is in on-prem or in the control planes in SaaS. So inline, it's a reverse proxy. It's a defender that allows us to do our advanced blocking scenarios and block based on fingerprinting. For the out-of-band version, it's a network sensor that would take a feed of traffic from either, you know, AWS VPC traffic mirroring in the cloud, a packet broker on-prem, and use that to pull the metadata we need to send the information to the control plane for analysis. In that instance, we would just be alerting when we find potential attacks or fraud. And so it would require the security team to stop the attack. And so we can either send that information to a SIEM or SOAR platform, email distribution, or even a feed, you know, a syslog feed directly into a SIEM.
Just to build on that point, Vince, what are you finding enterprises are doing any particular, you know, SaaS is, of course, is popular in general, but at the same time, you mentioned that it's more of the detection and informing. Are clients or enterprises then resorting to remediating themselves through SOAR integration and other automation, or is this truly an inline solution that is take, you know, what's the balance in your set of customers?
Yeah, so most of the customers are SaaS and most of the customers are in line. And there's kind of three aha moments that happen. Like, what APIs do I have? Am I being attacked? Can my current security solution stop the attack? And on this third one, that's really hard. It's really hard to do. And so being able to block via a fingerprint, a sequence fingerprint, or even being able to do the deceptive response is a unique feature. So I most of our customers are actually using us in line.
Okay.
It can take, you know, a little bit of education along the way to get to that point. But at the end of the day, you're trying to stop these attacks, not just in point of time, but also sustain that protection over time. And, you know, it's really, really hard to do that if you're trying to take signal from sequence and then, you know, use another product to try to stop those attacks.
I am kind of, intensely interested in some of the automated mitigation. So the honeypotting, the deceptive response is kind of really interesting. And I think you can do some geofencing. I think you can do some fake data. So that's pretty interesting. You've got the rate limiting. So what does an automated response typically look like? So do you start with the honeypot kind of capability while you start rate limiting and then start profiling some of the sequence of the IOC? What does it kind of look like? Because I think that is a very unique proposition.
Yeah, that's a great question. So out of the box, we're shipping with 190 rules. Those are system rules, and then customers can extend that those rules with their own custom rules. And as each of those rules fire, we'll aggregate a confidence score. And so if more of these rules fire, we're more confident that the intent was malicious, whether it was from a bot, whether it was from a human farm, you know, in another geo. It doesn't matter. We're looking at signal to try to figure out what the intent of the transaction was. If it's highly confident, most customers will either block that or do the deceptive response. So a great scenario to think about is around insurance scraping. If your competitors are trying to fill in information to understand your table, your intellectual property is your rate table in terms of how much you charge for different demographics. And they're trying to scrape that data, they'll just continue to insert different combinations of factors and see what you're charging. With the honeypot, you can actually, with the honey trap functionality, you can actually send back whatever rates you want to send. You don't have to expose your rate table. And so whatever information they think they're getting, you're actually feeding them. Another use case that we see a lot of customers do is around account takeover protection. So we're protecting tens of millions of accounts each week from account takeovers, because once you've taken over that account, you have access to, you know, say payment methods, balance information, you can do transfers, et cetera. And so it's useful for our clients to actually tell the attackers that they successfully logged in without giving them access to all that information. It drives up their cost to try and understand what's going on. So it's a great use case. I think, you know, it really depends on where the customer is in the journey. Some are just happy to have it stopped. Like they just don't want to have to deal with the traffic anymore. It's either impacting their site or impacting their business. But others will do those more advanced use cases. For transactions where we're not sure, the customers can rate limit, or they can, you know, do some other things to either insert a challenge like a CAPTCHA or something else. It's a challenge that they would serve. So they have some capability to use our products in conjunction with other security products to, you know, create a little bit of friction without doing it for everyone. And then for new attack types, we typically just label those or alert on those or put, you know, inject a header so they can be investigated later. And then once those teams have an opportunity to look at those in aggregate, they can actually put in custom rules to stop those attacks going forward. But it's not something that we would necessarily do without them participating in the process. The platform is incredibly extensible. You know, we've worked with customers to build specific models based on their use case. And so, you know, at the end of the day, we're trying to, you know, sustain this protection over time.
Yeah. Vince, can you share maybe a use case study of an enterprise or that may serve for a call to action for our listener base here, and if you can just highlight some of the key valid points for a call to action.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the recent ones, we had a large organization who was already using us for defending some of their API endpoints, and you know, their security team, unfortunately, through their own threat research, realized that someone was conducting a Ebola attack. They were able to leverage a login endpoint that should have been deprecated and then access an API that wasn't supposed to be publicly available. That API was just feeding sensitive information in clear text. And, you know, it was easy for us to stop as soon as we were, you know, that traffic was onboarded to the Sequence platform. That took a matter of minutes. That wasn't a lot of time, but I think the urgency that we would like to help, I think what we'd like to help organizations understand is that if you're not looking at these things, there's a good chance that you're missing something. And it's not a lot of cost for you to work with a vendor, work with a partner to do some of that initial validation and just make sure that if you have governance programs in place, they're working.
Great.
So there's, I'm trying to think, I can go one of two ways here, but maybe we can start, maybe we'll start with this. So CQAI is the fundamental platform. And then you've got a series of modules that really plug into that platform. Can you walk us through a little bit of what that portfolio looks like of products? Yep. And maybe just a brief description for each?
Yeah, so there's more coming. So we're going to do what we have on the truck today. But API Sentinel is really around API hygiene, API risk management, risk assessment, and API governance. It can use the same data plane, or it can collect telemetry through, you know, basically if you have a gateway that's sending transactions, we can integrate with a gateway directly to get telemetry into the platform if you don't want to use the network-based approach. As we're looking at transactions, we're identifying APIs that are undocumented or unmanaged, APIs that are potentially using weak authentication, leaking sensitive information. And there's even request level detail where you can see where the requests were originating from, what organizations, and so you can do some risk assessment based on the traffic profiling. We have a very rich sensitive data dashboard that comes with a lot of pre-built expressions to identify sensitive data, and of course that's extensible. I think that feature came from a customer. There's another stakeholder in these conversations that's called the chief data officer. And so to be able to track if there was a compromise on where if sensitive information was being communicated over an API, there's one dashboard where you can identify where it went. The second product is Bot Defense. And this is a 100% network-based approach. We do have a few different deployment models, as I covered. These products work hand in hand. So if you have a shadow API identified in Sentinel, that can inform a policy and Bot Defense to protect that shadow API until it's documented, or until, you know, the proper authentication is put in place, or if that API is moved to an API gateway that's going to handle that. So there's a lot of interaction between the two capabilities, but Sentinel's really around the risk assessment, governance, and cataloging, and then the Bot Defense is really around detection of some of those attacks that aren't tied to the OWASP API top 10. They're tied to API abuse or business logic abuse, account takeovers, that type of stuff. And then that's where the prevention piece is as well.
Yeah. So what I like the most about this is, so we see in our customers, a lot of them are switching to product mode. And so those product teams are solely responsible for bringing products to market, for operating them, for securing them, et cetera, et cetera. What I love about this is you could start with the security team. You could get a posture. That posture is likely going to then be cascaded down to those product teams to say, hey, we've discovered something. It's your responsibility to take care of that. And then you immediately turn around and you're able to work with them to say, and here's the ways we can mitigate it. Yeah. They can still take the responsibility. Both of those groups have the budget and the authority to move forward with that. So it seems like that platform stitches together and then almost leaves behind a set of best practices, because then it can start talking about what you want to do with these APIs, who's accessing which versions of your APIs. You can get into some rhythms of really defining, standardizing these specifications more clearly. So it really, like, depending on where you want to start, it feels like that's a complete, back to sequence. It's that Mobius loop of.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think there's a lot of stakeholders here. There's red teams that need to know what to target in an attack. There's the application security teams. There's the CISO, risk management, SRE teams. Some of the organizations we work with, the primary stakeholder is the line of business, because they're feeling the financial impact, either because the site's going down or because of the amount of fraud that's taking place.
Yeah.
So it is a bunch of different stakeholders that are involved in these discussions. And, you know, we're continuing to innovate to make it easier for these teams to work together. And so one of the key features that we recently released, we're able to generate specs based on runtime traffic. So if you have an out-of-date spec, or if you have an undocumented or unmanaged API with no spec, we can use all the traffic patterns that we've seen to generate a spec and then start building that into the best practice.
Yeah,
I think one of the key challenges for many organizations is, you know, once you find an issue, what do you do? So being able to shield right, being able to have protection in place is definitely a requirement that I think people are starting to understand.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time on observability, and it's interesting because we create observability lakes, we create these pipelines, we put guardrails on them. However, if you punch a hole with an API and expose data, that's not necessarily being reflected in logs, that's not necessarily being captured in these observability lakes. It's legitimate traffic. You just didn't, you know, maybe you didn't hide the complexity, maybe you just exposed something incorrectly, but like that's an easy way to slip through. And so all these guardrails that we put in place are really for naught if you allowed somebody to come through the front door and grab incorrect data. So all of these techniques are so important to that greater challenge of security. And one we're going to have to bring to market.
Yeah. So yeah,
I couldn't say that better, but I think the reality, like all these organizations are trying to make it easy to reduce friction for their customers, and they're inadvertently doing it. They're making it easier to be attacked.
Yeah.
That's kind of the key thing.
Yeah. The customer experience is paramount. And then obviously then internally the developer experience and everything else has to stitch together because, as you mentioned, it creates additional vulnerabilities in the process. But hopefully our listeners learned a lot today from you, Vince. We want to thank you for your time and hoping that Sequence becomes top of mind for our listeners and API security becomes top of mind in general. So thank you again for joining. And for our subscribers, our listeners, we thank you for listening in. And if you like what you heard, give us a like. So please subscribe to the channel. We hope to keep good content coming your way.
Yeah, thanks, Vince.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate what you're doing because there's a lot of information out there. So I think this is a good opportunity for people to get, you know, some dialogue without, you know, through your expertise and then talking to companies like ourselves.
Yeah, we hope, again, our listeners reach out to us, reach out to yourself, and we'll happily bring this to you guys as well.
Thanks so much.
Have a good one.